Today's talk is not going to be a speech, I hope. I mean, depending on the crowd, but this is not a speech. Okay, this is a workshop. That means that you can feel free to, to put up your hand and interrupt and ask a question. You know, for the sake of order, I'll call on you. But the idea is that you should be able to come away with at least some good practical knowledge, whether you're doing some retail shopping or whether you're going to a restaurant and eating and you're a little bit confused about some of the details. We'll try to explain some of the basic points. We won't get to everything, of course. It's only a one-hour talk. And I hope that at the end of the day, everybody should feel comfortable with some of the knowledge that you've gained. And as such, you're going to have to ask some questions. I will, hopefully, if you stop me on time, I will dedicate a 10-minute allotment at the end of the workshop just for questions that you might happen to have, whether they be about general kashrus, whether they be about the COR directly. Don't forget that the COR is a community organization, and we're not afraid of controversy or questions. And if you have something that's bothering you, you can ask me. And there's certainly a plausible explanations for most things. Some things, of course, there's never going to be satisfactory answers for. But in the general, we want you to walk away comfortable and happy with what you've learned. So, of course, today we're going to speak about kashrus. And fundamentally, if you take a look around and try to observe some of the different types of mitzvos in the Torah, and some of the different types of isurim, forbidden things, what to do and what not to do, that God has sent down through his Torah, kashrus seems to be something that people have taken seriously. And I'm not going to contrast it to any other of the 613 mitzvos, but kashrus is something that is very much a part of everybody's life. It's something that everybody wants to take seriously and understand properly. And I think we need not look farther than Rashi in Parsha Shemos, in last week's Parsha, where you have the story with Moshe Rabbeinu, with Moses, and he was the baby, and the Bas Paro, Basia, took him out of the river and wanted to take care of this baby. He found this baby floating in the river. What is she going to do with him? So she attempts to find a suitable nurse for the baby, somebody to feed the baby. And the rabbis teach us that Moshe Rabbeinu refused to nurse from any of the Egyptian women until finally the Basia, the daughter of Paro, realized that she might have to try an alternative, and they found a nice Jewish woman who happened to be Moshe's mother, Yocheved, and the baby was very happy, Moshe. And Rashi comments that the peh, she'asid ledaber ima shechina, the mouth that in the future was going to talk to the omnipresent, to the shechina, to God, was not suitable for that baby to nurse from an Egyptian mother. So the rabbis teach us that if we try to think about this scenario, the milk from an Egyptian woman is actually permitted. It's not something which is forbidden by Torah law. It's permitted if that's what has to be. The milk of a non-kosher woman is certainly permitted. But Moshe Rabbeinu had to be, even as a little baby, he was already starting on the right foot, he had to be extra cautious. And why? Because he realized that his essence and his life was going to be dedicated, from a baby's perspective, of course, but it was going to be dedicated to working with the Jewish people, to being a resting place for God, and when we're sensitive enough to realize that, so we have to understand that maybe when it comes to kashrus, we do have to take the extra step to be a little bit extra careful. It's common that before Pesach, we work so hard in the house, and it's a lot of work. You gotta clean and the nooks and the crannies, and you gotta search and you gotta, and scrape and you wonder sometimes, is this really what I'm required to do? I'm going to tell you just a short story and then we're going to get into it. But a friend of mine, his father, the story happened to a friend of mine's father where he happened to be at a business meeting and the business meeting took him to a non-kosher restaurant. And he had to, you know, he had to sit in a non-kosher restaurant, which was fine. And he ordered whatever he had to order, a fruit salad, and maybe we'll talk about what we might be able to have in a non-kosher restaurant. But whatever it was that he ordered. And he was sitting with a partner who was a Jewish man, who was a Jewish fellow. And, you know, he wasn't someone who kept kosher. So he was eating this and he was eating that, whether it was, you know, different types of things. And the Orthodox fellow was being very polite, and as they were about to exit, you know, he stops them and he says, this partner says to him, you know, I grew up in an Orthodox home. I used to keep kosher, but I don't keep kosher anymore. So this other fellow says, okay, the Orthodox fellow says, that's fine, you know, everybody's entitled. So he says, but you know what? I can eat anything. Whether it's a cheeseburger, whether it's ham and eggs, anything, I can eat it. It doesn't bother me anything. There's one thing I just can't eat. So he says, what can't you eat? So he says, when Pesach comes, 8 days, I can't, when I put chametz into my mouth, I'm nauseated. I have to spit it out. So he says, why chametz and Pesach? He says, I remember my mother slaving away, scraping the tiles and in the back of the oven and under the fridge. And it's just, for me to put that into my mouth, I just can't do it. We see the importance of establishing, you know, taking the extra step in kashrus is whether, you know, we ourselves appreciate it or it's, you know, bringing that kedusha, that holiness into our homes so that that we can see it and our children can see it. It makes a lasting impact. But we're going to get into now practical kashrus for the Orthodox shopper. That's what the class is entitled, although I did not choose that title. I was going to speak about something totally different, but just kidding. There are about 750 certifying agencies out there in the world. Many of them are in Israel, but there are about 750 certifiers. And if you look at handouts number one, we'll call it, this is a list that...
Just the kosher ones?
Kosher certifiers.
It would be interesting to see all the other ones that are out, too. That would be interesting.
Yes, absolutely. There are 750 kosher certifiers in the world. Now, the list that I gave out, which is handout number one, which is called Approved Agencies... Okay, agencies which there's no doubt, and any symbol which you see that looks like one of them on the list that I've given out, you can certainly eat from. That's not to say that there aren't other agencies which are not on the list, which you can also eat from. But these certainly you can eat from. Okay, these you can trust, they're reliable. The list has been compiled for that reason, so to make it easier for the consumer. Now, I want to tell you something. There's a big mistake out there. And, you know, I once had to get, you know, into even, a woman was arguing with me. I said, OR is not a kosher certifying agency. She said, what do you mean? No, Orthodox rabbis. OR is kosher. I said, no, you're making a big mistake. It's not. OR, registered trademark, is not. So... The question. The question is, you know, okay, we have the list, and I'm sure you all take my word that these are reliable agencies. And if there's another agency that's not on the list, I'm sure you'll take my word that you'll have to ask a question or find out a little bit more details before you eat it. The question is why? You know, what is it already? Is it politics, money? You know, what? What? How many vote for money? How many vote for politics? Right? Unfortunately, that's the perception out there. You know, it's an unfortunate perception, but, you know, that's, again, because it's such an important topic, so the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, has this tendency just to get in the way of objective thinking. But it's not money and it's not politics. What it is about is standards. Okay, standards. Now, we're not saying these standards are good and these standards are bad. As we know, machlokes or argument or differences of opinion is not a new thing. We weren't the first ones to argue, and the rabbis have argued. Arguments started many, many years ago when the certain clarity of Torah became lost, and we ourselves became less and less of a people of Torah. So people, the interpretation of Torah and the interpretation of halacha and the interpretation of practical aspects of the industry have to be interpreted in different ways. That doesn't mean that one is right, and that doesn't mean that one is wrong. But I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is as follows. You know, 50 years ago, or before the war, let's call it, a community got together and they hired a rabbi, and the rabbi was the rabbi of the town, and they liked him, he was comfortable with them, they were comfortable for him, and they followed his ruling. Okay? Today, it's not the case. We all have a rabbi and we all follow his ruling. But when I get a certified product made in Madagascar, so then I'm following the rabbi's ruling from Madagascar. Now, I'm not saying he's not a competent fellow. He probably is, right? But how do I know if my rabbi agrees with all of the facts and all of the understanding and that went into the ruling that was made on that situation? And, you know, that is sort of the example, but it goes on and on and on. Our lives, we look for the kosher symbol. And if it has a kosher symbol, it's kosher. We don't look to understand what's behind the kosher symbol. How many leniencies, how many stringencies are put into place, and it's equally the other way around too. You know, if you have this, they call it the Hamisha Hechsher, the Chassidisha Hechsher, you know, who says that my rabbi is requiring me to go that far? Maybe I don't have to. Maybe I can eat something else, which is not as stringent. We'll talk about Chol of Yisrael and not Chol of Yisrael afterwards. But who says that I have to be stringent? So that's the problem that faces us today as community members. We don't know what does our rabbi want, what does he not want. Maybe he doesn't know. Maybe he doesn't understand processes at a manufacturing agency. So we have to talk about standards. And the standards have to be set. And rabbis, community rabbis, have to be comfortable with those standards. And then we can sort of draw a line. Whether or not an agency doesn't have that standard or does have that standard and has a different standard, if they're not in line with the standards, we have to say, okay, from that agency, whether they're right or wrong in their opinion is not the issue. The issue is whether my rabbi or the person that I'm following is comfortable with that standard. And that's the perspective that we have to look at. So COR happens to be a community agency. Our board of rabbis is comprised of 18 community rabbis, 17 or 18 community rabbis from Toronto. So we have a consensus. So if we have a consensus, then we go forward based on that consensus. Now, obviously, we have, for expertise sake, we have the opinion of what's called the ACO. ACO is called the Associated Kashrus Organizations, who is a group of the experts from the OU and the OK and the MK and the STAR-K and the CHOV-K, the big national agencies, who have gotten together and created written standards for kashrus organizations. Just like accounting has GAAP, just like law, you know, you write the bar exam, everything is dictated by the industry, so kashrus has the same set of standards. Kashrus has standards, these standards are written standards, and if you abide by those standards, you get onto the list. If you don't abide by the standards, you might have a different opinion, and it might also be okay. But you're not on the list. And then the community rabbis, in turn, understand that. Now, the OU is 500 times bigger than all the kashrus organizations put together from an industrial setting. Yes, that's what I heard. I think it's true. It seems to be true if you look in the market. Now, obviously, they're going to have a very, very strong opinion on what those standards have to be, but that's okay. The OU, they have their experts, well-respected international experts, and that's what the symbol is all about. are these organizations up to the standards which are set, whether they're right or wrong, those are the standards that are set, or are they not? Now, I'll just give a throw at a couple of examples, and maybe one of them we'll talk about, and that is some organizations kosherize, or we kasher, kalim, in between non-kosher and kosher uses, and some don't.
Now, of the manufacturer.
They require of the manufacturer to kasher their kalim in between kosher and non-kosher. Some don't. Now, the halachic understanding of why anyone would not require to kasher, right? If I had a pot and I cooked in treif, right? And then I want to cook in kosher, obviously I have to kasher it. So why would some organizations not require of the manufacturers to kasher their kalim? That's a halachic discussion, has to do with after 24 hours, maybe the whatever's inside the kalim is not really treif, and then they don't really have to kasher because they're not Jewish. It's a discussion itself. I'm not going to get into it. And is it acceptable? Is it not acceptable? It's a halachic opinion, right? Is it an accepted standard? No. So therefore, any organization who practices that way is not accepted. Okay? That knocks out many organizations, by the way. Many of the 750. Now, let's talk about gelatin, for example. Gelatin, right? We all know gelatin is a substance which is
makes jello.
Certainly, it's very widely used. Is it kosher or is it not kosher? So gelatin is a derivative from a pig. It has a non-kosher source, but it's not so clear that it's not kosher. It comes from the bone of the pig, and maybe the bone of the pig does not the same as the meat of the pig. A whole halachic situation, which again we're not going to get into. Right? Now the question is gelatin kosher or not? That's a rabbi has to answer. If you want to ask a rabbi's opinion, you have a rabbi. You can ask me afterwards for my opinion. But in the shir, what I'm going to say is, that's halachic interpretation. Now, any organization who accepts pig gelatin into their product does not get onto the list. Okay?
Sure.
Now, I'll give one more example, and we'll talk about it a little bit further. Shemitah. This year, as we know, is the seventh year, the sabbatical year in Israel. And the Torah says, in the sabbatical year in Israel, all the land has to rest. And there's many, many intricate and complex laws which deal with the fruit of the land and the vegetables, the produce of the land in the seventh year. And what's the halacha? Can he eat it? Can he not eat it? What are the details of whether you can eat it or not? There's a whole slew of opinions. It's really very complex, and it's probably about 10 classes in and of itself, just to get a simple understanding of what's going on. It's very, very complicated. And when I understand it, then I could give the 10 classes, but I'm not holding there yet. I'm not there yet. There are differences of opinions. Right, the Rabbanut HaReshit LiYisrael sells the land of Israel. I think they still do it, even though most of their constituents don't agree with the practice. But they still do it, and they sell the land. And therefore, if they sell the land, then non-Jews own the land. So maybe the produce is not subject to the laws of Shemitah. An opinion, right? An opinion. Many, many rabbis, including yours, would disagree with that opinion. And therefore, the fruit of Israel are subject to the laws of Shemitah. Now, any organization that takes the fruit of Shemitah based on the fact that the land was sold, including the Rabbanut HaReshit LiYisrael, is not on the list. We can't, because there's a standard that's set. Again, right or wrong is not the issue. The standards. And the standards are set, and if you meet the standards, you're on the list, and if you don't meet the standards, you're not on the list. That's where the list comes from, and that's the understanding of the list. So is it politics? Is it money? It's not, for the most part. It's not. It's standards. And we should understand them. We should have a perspective that like that. Now, I want to talk about Sobeys. Okay, we all shop at Sobeys, right? Assuming.
Big business.
So I just want to, this is for my own, this is the COR Polling Institute now. How many people think everything in Sobeys is kosher?
Everything on the shelf.
Okay, fine, because there's non-kosher in Sobeys. Now, how many people think that everything in the kosher aisles is approved by the COR. Okay, good. None. Excellent. Good stuff. So your rabbi has done his job, and he's got the message out. Unfortunately, I'm not sure that this is the common understanding. I'm not sure. That's why I was taking a poll.
But can we say about the bakery and the deli and the fish counter?
Yes. The bakery, the deli, and the fish counter are under COR. And the meat?
Yes.
What's the olive cart? Anything that's not labeled is under the COR. Anything unlabeled is under the COR. But products...
In Sobeys.
We're talking about Sobeys.
This Sobeys here, not
kosher section. Yeah,
not...
Right. Sobeys, Clark, kosher section.
Yes.
Clark and Hilda.
Anything not labeled is kosher.
Yes. So, now the question... Non-packaged. Right. Open, ready for sale in the department. Now, there are things in the bakery department which, again, have a kosher certification, may be acceptable to some, but may not be acceptable to your rabbi. I say may not be acceptable to your rabbi. You can ask him. He's available for you.
But there's certain...
Yes.
What would be one? What would be one? I'm just...
I don't want to talk about any specific organization, but let's talk about one that I think it's fair to talk about. They're putting it on the website? Okay. Okay. If it's not on the list, then call me about it. If it's a Hechsher, like, okay, let's talk about the WK. Okay? The WK is a Hechsher out of Winnipeg. And the Hechsher has now recently been taken over by a very fine Orthodox rabbi. And he's trying to improve the standards. It used to be run by the conservative board, if I'm not mistaken, in Winnipeg. And he's trying to improve the standards, but he's not there yet. And as a result, if a product bears WK, COR does not endorse that Hechsher. Doesn't mean that Sobeys can't put it in the aisle, because If you want to, you trust them. It's up to the consumer. But I'll give another example. It's really for the Shemitah part of the class. But yesterday, Sobeys received crates and crates full of yellow, red, and orange peppers from Israel. Uh-oh. Now, the COR could have said, no, Sobeys, don't put that out. But we didn't, because we don't own the store. And, you know, it's their store. And we don't certify the vegetable section. So it's from Israel. It's subject to the laws of Shemitah, according to your rabbi, and according to most opinions, according to the way that COR understands as well. And therefore, you should watch out for the yellow, red, and orange peppers and Sobeys. If you have any at home, ask me after the class.
You see, this is exactly where the whole issue of politics comes up. Because I would think that if the COR has taken on a responsibility for the communal kashrut of Toronto to allow people to walk in and without any kind of warnings, without any signs up front, being careful about the peppers or whatever, I think that doesn't serve us well. And I would think Sobeys would find it in their interest to be really close with the COR, that you have, like, you have a clout.
Yeah.
With the COR.
If absolutely.
Cause any kind
no,
of
the signs were up.
Challenge for them.
The signs were up.
Okay.
But the signs are up in Sobeys.
Okay, we'll use that example, but you're also saying there are other products in this.
Consult your rabbi. The signs are up. Excuse me. The signs are up. The signs are up.
No. I use that as an example, but you were also talking about other products on the shelves. You said before that it has the approval of the COR.
Is there anything that...
Certain
not walking in shelves, I cannot assume that the COR has approved stuff that Sobeys, who presumably would want the COR to be looking after the total kashrus of the situation.
At this moment in time, Sobeys would rather bring in a broader range of product, even if they're not on the list of the COR, than say all of our aisles are under the endorsement of the COR. So that's this point in time. Whether they'll change that, you'll certainly hear about it. Whether it's going to be a statement that says the Sobeys aisles are not endorsed by the COR, for if you want to know if a specific agency is endorsed by the COR, contact us or get our list. Or it'll go the other way, and Sobeys will say, no, we want the community to be taken care of properly, as you're suggesting. But we, our policy is we can't impose our standards. We're talking about standards here, we're not talking about absolutes. So we can't impose our standards on the broader community. Okay, so if that's Sobeys' decision, if they'd like to make it. Now, what we would like to do is make it clear to the community what is and what's not. That's our problem. That's what we have to do. Yes. And was it done properly in the past? I'm not sure. Everybody here knows about it, but that doesn't mean that everybody out there knows about it.
Yeah. Yes. So the Rav just said 5 minutes ago that anything that was open, not packaged, without any notification, is kosher.
In the kosher, around the kosher parts.
Which is like our olive cart. So now we're finding out that the Rav just said, well, the produce is not necessarily.
Not
under
right.
So does that include
the
olive cart or not?
No, anything that's prepared foods, anything that's prepared foods would be prepared in the kitchen. The kitchen is under the COR and would be put out there. Yes, it needs better labeling. It needs better community awareness. Agreed.
No, that's on a daily basis, Sobeys is going to be getting different products and things from Israel. So things, information is going to change on a daily basis.
Yes.
Is there a way that we can have access to information? Like one day it'll be peppers, the next day it'll be oranges, the next day it'll be something.
Yes.
Is there a way we can have daily access?
Yes, there is. Absolutely. After the shiur, I'm gonna have you, if you would like to be part of my Shemitah email group.
Wow.
Okay? And get daily, hopefully. I hope it's gonna be daily. It depends on if our sources are gonna be on the ball or not. But you know, we had special siyata d'shmaya. We had special help from heaven to meet somebody who's in the food terminal. We'll discuss it when we talk about Shemitah. But we have access to some good secret information, and hopefully you can also have access to it if you sign up after this year. Yes.
So it seems to me that from my experience with Sobeys over the years that they are very sensitive to the kosher consumer, very wisely so. Would it help? I remember, for example, when the Oslo War started and everybody was trying to find ways to support Israel, they not only had a kosher section, they had a section that labeled products from Israel. And somebody must have told them that there was a thing. Would it help for us, for like a grassroots, you know, kind of build up for people to say, we want core to have the standards of core. We want to be comfortable as kosher consumers in Sobeys to the point that we can trust everything on the shelf.
Not only will it help, it's the only way it's going to happen. The only way anything is going to happen is from the consumers. The COR, as totalitarian as they may seem, has no bargaining power in these kinds of, you know, they have us on the leash in these kind of issues. If there's a community opinion about something, and it comes from the community. Listen, the buyer is talking. The money talks, right?
Money.
And they care about the community. They don't care necessarily about which rabbi is telling them what. You know, they care about the community. If the community, what we're trying to do is evoke a voice in the community so that the community can be better aware of what's going on, to understand properly, and then to formulate an opinion. And whatever the opinion of the community is, we'll stand behind that. Okay.
A few years ago, that one was Pesach, and they hadn't labeled all the things that you, Ashkenazi could eat versus the Sephardi.
Yes.
Until I made such a stink of service that the following year they labeled everything that we could eat.
Yes, that's the only way.
Because how do we?
It's the only way.
Like the oil, the sanctioned oil we can eat and they eat, and we buy it and we presume that it's okay.
Right.
So they labeled it.
Agreed.
Last year it was very good. It was clearly labeled.
Agreed.
Is there anybody at Sobeys who cares, or as it just purely financial for them? Like, is there a
prune guy?
I can't. There's a mashkiach. No, but I think you're asking about the Sobeys themselves.
Yeah.
They care. I can't answer that question. But they care as much as you care. If you care, they care.
All right.
For whatever reason.
It's not on their own. It's not
lishma. No, there's no lishma.
See, there are other stores you can go to, and Sobeys, if they don't care,
people will turn around and go, like the superstore down at Dufferin and Steele's. If you're not satisfied there, you'll go there, or you'll go to Toronto. So I expect that you're smart enough to care.
Wherever we can concentrate a group voice, that's where they're going to care. If we can formulate an opinion, a proper opinion, and express that opinion properly, any store, it doesn't have to be Stobie's, will care. You know, Pesach time, maybe I'll come back and speak about Chametz She'Avarlava Pesach, which means Chametz that existed in the possession of a Jew throughout Pesach. And the serious problems that we have here in Toronto regarding retail supermarkets and their sale of Chametz She'Avarlava Pesach that we have no idea about. So, Pesach time, there'll be another discussion about that. Suffice it to say, we need to formulate an opinion about a lot of things, and we need to voice that opinion. Now, the rabbi asked me to talk a little bit about things which are acceptable without certification. Now, I feel it's a little bit dangerous, not because we want to give our certification to toilet paper, but because we, you know, yeah, I mean, does water need a hechsher?
Maybe.
Anyone?
Maybe.
Anyone?
No.
Maybe.
Yes, because New York State for wrote that water can go through the same filters that they use for grape juice, same pasteurizations for grape juice.
Right, correct. Pesach, sorry, you said New York water. Maybe you know there's a bug. Maybe there's a bug issue. What you're talking about is recycled water, which is used for more for commercial purposes than drink. They don't put that in the bottle, but there was a company that was. Was charged in New York using labeling something spring water. It wasn't really spring water. So, yes, it helps. But theoretically speaking, you know, being normal and reasonable, water doesn't require a hechsher. So water doesn't require a hechsher all year round. Pesach, maybe there's a reason to be more careful depending on your custom. The law in Shulchan Aruch talks about water from a Pesach perspective. So that's a different conversation. Now, fruits and vegetables, right? So,
it's a whole talk on itself. Wow.
So, you know, can I go into a non-kosher restaurant and have a fruit salad, right? So, presumably, again, I don't want to paskin any shilas here. I don't want to answer any questions. You can ask me afterwards. Fruit, the other six years of the year, and even the seventh year, if there's no real reason to believe that we have Israeli produce here. Fruit in general is what we call group one, which in technical terms means it's kosher without any sort of certification, excluding strawberries, raspberries, blackberries, right?
Lettuce.
No, fruit I'm talking about. So, presumably speaking, now we would have to sort of understand which knives are they using on the fruit. Are they cutting them with clean knives or dirty knives? Or
food,
yeah.
As opposed to fresh fruit.
I'm talking about fresh fruit in a restaurant or something.
In a restaurant, because then you've got grape juice in the fruit salad.
Grape juice in the fruit salad. Yeah, that's in the industrial product, right?
Yeah, but if you go and have a fruit salad in a restaurant,
they're putting grape juice. Okay, there we go.
It
might be. Okay, I think you know we have to understand which knives they're using and if it's reasonable to suspect or it's not really reasonable, and that's a halachic question, and your rabbi can be asked, but fruit in general is considered what we call a group one. Now let's extend that to frozen fruit. Okay, we're going to extend that now to frozen fruit in packages, pre-packed frozen fruit. All it is, I don't know, blueberry, frozen blueberries, nothing else on the ingredient. You're permitted to purchase that product, no questions asked.
Okay?
Yeah, that's a bug problem. So
freezing, just to make clear, because there are a lot of people out there.
IQF.
Freezing does not change anything.
Freezing, IQF, I can't make that statement, but IQF fruit, which means instant quick frozen fruit, is called a group one and does not need certification. We'll talk about vegetables now. First fresh vegetables. Fresh vegetables, unless it's a bug problem, again, is considered a group one. Which means permissible to purchase without any sort of certification. And what about frozen vegetables? Now, frozen vegetables, let me explain to you quickly what the process is, and you'll tell me if it should be considered a group one. Frozen vegetables, before they are frozen, they're actually cooked. Okay? Why are they cooked? To get rid of the bacteria. Okay? Now, I'm not going to explain what the cooker does and how hot the temperature gets, and suffice it to say, they cook in there. Now, question is, what else are they cooking in there? Right? Is it just vegetables? Vegetable plant?
Fine. It's cooked by a non-Jew, is that a problem?
Well, most vegetables are eaten raw, so
not.
It wouldn't be a problem. Now, the question is, what else are they doing in the plant? So, I've seen other things that they do in vegetable plants, but, like, a funny story. I happened to be at a vegetable plant, and
it's
we
like
cer-
a Jack Benny joke, okay?
I won't tell you which one, but we certify a number of different vegetables there, and finally we're walking through the plant, and then there's this other side of the plant. So what's in the other side of the plant? It happened to be my first visit there. It was taken care of by another rabbi, who happened not to be there at the time. So I didn't know. I was just going through it blindly. And what's on the other side of the plant? Oh, we make onion rings. Oh, you make onion rings. Yeah, how do you make onion rings? Okay, we chop up the onions, and then there's a batter. And okay, now, the question is, yeah, the onions go there, the frozen vegetables go there. There's still really no cross-contamination. It's all machinery, all dedicated machinery, no problems. So what happens to there's onions that make it to the batter, and there's onions that sort of just fall off on a different line, and the line's coming back. And anyway, there was a question of cross-contamination, but in the end of the day, it really wasn't. But I'm just saying there are other things sometimes that might be done at the place. The COR accepts frozen vegetables without certification. Okay? As long as it's not a bug problem, we also qualify it to not from China. Okay? We don't know what their industrial practices are, and we don't feel comfortable. Now, in certain vegetables, maybe, yeah, but that's the general rule.
But so many vegetables do have a bug problem.
Yes. Correct. But let's say peas, carrots, and I don't know, and corn, right? Let's say it's not from China, and it's not from, can't be from Israel either, right? Let's say it's not from China, and it's not from Israel, and it's just peas, carrots, and corn. So the COR standard is to accept it. Now, is that the standard of everybody? There are agencies which are more stringent because of the cross-contamination issue.
It's always better to get something with a hesher if you can get one.
Yes, always better to get something with a hesher because you don't have a problem. But if you don't have it or it's cheaper and it's a lot more, the other product is more expensive, then you can buy it. Canned. Now, canned goes through very similar processing. It's canned and then it's cooked in a retort. Basically, certain canned fruit, there's a lot of details to this one, right? Not from Israel, not with a cherry, not with any grape juice in it. If it's just canned fruit in light syrup from North America, it's okay. But canned vegetables is not okay. Why not? Because the different types of plants, and vegetable plants can can beans, and they can can pork and beans, and they can can a lot of other. They can or maybe not. You know, I mean, it's not something we can decide. So if it's not certified, we don't accept it. If it is certified, it's okay.
If it has a hexer, does it need to be checked?
What do you mean?
If a can of vegetables has a hexer, does it still need to be checked?
For what?
Bugs.
Well, presumably, if it's a bug problem, there wouldn't be a hexer on it.
Same with MK as well?
MK, yeah.
Okay,
reliable. Okay, that's sort of the aleph base of group ones. Now we understand that there are things out there that can be bought without a hechsher. The list is extensive. I'm not really going to go further than what I've already said. But if you have a question, you can ask me afterwards. Now, I'm going to veer off into COR a little bit and try to get a good hold and understanding on what's going on with dairy restaurants. Okay, it used to be that's one of your handouts, and you can.
So can I just ask one question?
Yeah, sure.
Because you mentioned something about restaurants. So if you are in a situation where you see a fruit salad, I've even seen this in kosher places, a fruit salad and it has fruit in it that you know is not okay,
that
it has a bug problem.
Yeah.
What type of?
Not in Toronto.
You call the
somewhere else.
Okay.
I saw raspberries on a platter in a bar mitzvah that was supposed to be a kosher caterer in another state.
Okay, there are kosher agencies that would allow these kind of things. Now again, it goes back to the original conversation: is it right or wrong? It might be right, it might be wrong. But who should decide what's right and wrong? That's your rabbi. So if your rabbi subscribes to the, for example, if he, let's say, would say that whatever the COR's policy, that's what you should do, then you might not want to eat that. That doesn't mean it's wrong, it doesn't mean it's bad. It just means there's another opinion out there, and it's not yours.
So my question was, so you hold by the standard, we hold by the standard that we can you pick other fruit off of that platter that if it has raspberries?
It depends on if it has raspberries, fresh raspberries.
They're fresh raspberries, a big platter of fruit, fresh raspberries.
If it's further away, if it's not touching the raspberry, I wouldn't be so. I said I wasn't going to say any psak halacha, but we don't have to be choshesh, you know, that the bugs got everywhere. It can be confined to the raspberry.
I just want to clarify Jeanette's question. But within Toronto, if it's a core caterer or a core restaurant,
then you call the COR hotline, right, the emergency hotline.
Yes.
I'll give you my card after.
Raspberries or broccoli
served?
No, broccoli can be checked.
Yeah.
Raspberries are too
difficult. Broccoli, no, we don't check fresh broccoli, only frozen broccoli. But raspberries are not checked here. For whatever reason, that's the policy, though.
Kosher.
Yeah? Really?
What?
I don't think so. Strawberries.
Strawberries.
Yes.
I know food science has become such an issue today that it's so complex that we have to rely on the Heckscher. But like a rabbi from down in Bethesda Lawrence told me that when he was a kid he bought a chocolate bar. He went, he looked and said, "There's no pork in it." He bought the chocolate bar. Things were simpler then. People thought. People salted their own chickens. People did things, and they connected to the kashrut. Today, it seems like we're becoming robots.
Right.
We're looking. So heck, sure, fine. That's it. We don't even think about it. And I wonder about the healthiness of that whole thing.
It's terrible. I was going to talk about it when I discussed livers, but seems like I'm not going to discuss livers today. Maybe on a different occasion. But I agree with you. I couldn't have said it any better. We're robotic. We're blindly following the symbol. We don't understand the issues. We can't even differentiate. Maybe I'll just throw out the liver. Do we know that livers are sold to the market which are not kashered yet? Does everybody know it? I can tell you a lot of stories about people who had to kasher their kitchens because they cooked livers which weren't kashered. Now, why don't we know that? Why? Because nobody kashers anything today. Doesn't exist. So why should liver be any different? So because the COR didn't change the policy on liver, and it exists the same way it existed 50 years ago, so that's why people don't know about it. But the understanding of what kashrus is all about is lacking. And it has nothing to do with the level of frumkeit or the level of the experience of the people. I could be talking to any crowd, including the Kolo crowd from Bathurst and Lawrence or whoever was telling you about this. We have the same discussion on the exact same level. People today just don't understand what goes into the product. So much so is that they're making mistakes on other things which they shouldn't. If they understood the issues, they wouldn't be making those mistakes. So these are difficult topics, and I think we have to establish a weekly to cover this, and it'll take us a couple of years. But if you're interested, sure.
How much will it cost to bring Rav up every week?
It's on the house.
Really? We're willing to come?
We'll talk about it afterwards. I don't want to be like Ofer Achiti said when Avraham Avinu asked him to buy the Maris Machpela in public, he said, "Oh, no problem, for free." But then afterwards, he said, "Okay, it's only 400 shekels
for you
between me."
400 shekels between us.
Friends.
That when it said 100, when it didn't say 100, but when it said vegetable oil, that didn't exclude that there was some non-vegetable oil in it. We need better. We made mistakes when we were younger.
I would agree with that too. Now let's talk a little bit about let's try to move on. I don't want to. The rabbi said 1 hour and then that's it. So I have to follow the orders of the rabbi. Okay. For me, I'm here as long as you want me here. The dairy restaurants under the COR. Okay. I'm going to hand out afterwards the latest COR bulletin, which came in the Canadian Jewish News. Some of you may have seen it. Some of you may not have seen it. It's going to your shul this Shabbos, and you'll have a good preview of it. You know, it sounds like a lot of things are changing, and I want to just describe the realities, which are pretty well described here on the handout that we gave out. But there's two types of dairy designations according to modern halachic opinions. Okay, let's rewind. Let's take a historical perspective. What's Chalav Yisrael and what's not Chalav Yisrael according to the Gemara and according to the Shulchan Aruch? So if we take this perspective, it's going to be a lot healthier to deal with the issue. Okay, in the Gemara and in the Poskim, if it wasn't Chalav Yisrael, it wasn't kosher. Period. It's not a biblical decree. It's a rabbinic decree, but it's not kosher. If it's not Chalav Yisrael, it's not kosher. Now, approximately 50 years ago, now it's about a little more than 50 years ago, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein wrote a classic, very well-known tshuva, saying that in North America, because of the government standards, we can assume that even though Chalav Yisrael means there's a Jewish mashgiach standing there when they're milking the cows, that's what Chalav Yisrael means. But because of the laws of the land, we can assume that even though there's no Jewish person there, it's as if there was a Jewish person there. That's the perspective. So he said that let's create a third, it's not just black and white, Chalav Akum, which is the non-permitted, Chalav of a Goy, versus Chalav of a Yid of a Yisrael. Now there's going to be something called Chalav Stam, which is a third category, a middle category, saying that in North America, we can assume that everything, it's as if there was a video camera there and we were watching it and that will suffice.
That was 50 years ago.
Yeah. Now, today is a good question. Why can't we put video cameras in all the farms? Maybe that would work. I don't know.
North America. Wasn't Europe doing well?
I believe so. The last time I read the tshuva, that's what it sounded like to me.
The tshuva was, he said, what I believe, because I've discussed this at depth with certain people, that because of the agencies and the cost to the people of violating that today, and their honor and dignity in society, they wouldn't be fined, and they would keep the honor of not putting.
That's fair. That's fair. Now, in non-Chalav, I'll talk about it from a number of different perspectives. I'm not giving an opinion on Chalav Yisrael versus non-Chalav Yisrael. Rav Moshe Feinstein already permitted it. The COR since its creation, certifying non-Chalav Yisrael products. In fact, any CORD product, dairy product, is assumed to be not Chalav Yisrael unless you know otherwise. Okay? Not, that's fair. That means that we accept that opinion. And that's our standard, and it's the standard of many organizations as well. Now, there's, you know, from a community perspective, the Rabbonim in the community felt and feel that maybe their communities as a, you know, let's conglomerate Toronto together, should have Chalav Yisrael. It was a suggestion. Maybe the communities together should have Chalav Yisrael. And even though maybe it's not an absolute suggestion, but let's try as much as possible that if we're giving certifications to restaurants and the caterers, that those should be Chalav Yisrael. It's a higher standard because of what Dr. Levin, that maybe Ramosha didn't permit it just because he felt that way, and that was the real, maybe he permitted it because of the times, maybe he permitted for this and that reason, let's not get into that. But that's what the community rabbis decided, that wherever possible, they would try to be Chalav Yisrael on a community level, as opposed to on a product level. So that means that most people assumed that if there was going to be a COR restaurant, it was going to be Chalav Yisrael. That means the restaurant wouldn't be taking some of the products that the COR itself was certifying. Right, which existed for many, many, many years. Now, the problem is that there were so many exceptions to the rule. Right? We had, If you take a look at the list of the 8 not Chol of Yisrael establishments that we have today, 5 of them existed before any new policy changes were created. Country-style kosher cafeteria in York University was not Chol of Yisrael and has always been not Chol of Yisrael. Why? Because the rabbis decide, maybe on campus, maybe, you know, if the restaurant felt they needed to be not Chol of Yisrael in order to operate on campus, maybe we should be more lenient on campus. Exception. Chat always had, although it's not the same caterer, but they always had not Chol of Yisrael there, not just yogurt, Rachel's Cafe in the BJC, Baycrest, Second Cup in the BJC. These places were always not Chol of Yisrael. And today, we're looking for, the policies are not really changing, it's rather the attitude. We're looking for a little bit more consistency and transparency. So, what the rabbis decided was that we would certify 2 types of designations. First of all, to satisfy the requests of the broader communities, right? And let's just, you know, why if they felt that their communities were eating not Chol of Yisrael and they themselves allowed not Chol of Yisrael, why should we confine them to a standard which maybe is not the popular opinion? And because we felt, the rabbis felt, that we could probably make it clear enough to the consumer and leave the choice to them as opposed to us. Therefore, there's 2 types of COR dairy designations and their conditions attached to both of them. There's either Chol of Yisrael or there's not Chol of Yisrael. If you're Chol of Yisrael, that means you're 100% Chol of Yisrael. That means we won't use non-Chol of Yisrael products and we won't use non-Chol of Yisrael kalim. It means we won't there will be no cross-contamination between kalim that will not be used for non-Chol of Yisrael. If they are used for non-Chol of Yisrael, a halachic decision will have to be decided, but presumably they would be kashered. Okay? That's that standard. So if you're part of communities which hold by that standard, well, I'll take Lubavitch, for example. In the Lubavitch community, that's the standard, at least the global standard. And you can be comfortable in Chol of Yisrael designated restaurants. What about not Chol of Yisrael designated restaurants? So there's really 4 rules, and they're written down here. Number 1 is that you can't be both. You can't say, I'm Chol of Yisrael, but I'm not Chol of Yisrael. Right? I'm not Chol of Yisrael because I want that cream cheese, but I'm also going to provide Chol of Yisrael options. We won't allow that. It'll get too confusing. There'll be too many mistakes. It's impossible to do. So if you serve non-Chol of Yisrael, you are non-Chol of Yisrael. That's number 1. Okay? That means no, the only exception to that is if you serve it in its package. In other words, if you go to Second Cup and you want, you know, why can't I eat a parv Danish with a coffee and get Chol of Yisrael milk if I'm a Chol of Yisrael eater? Right? Why not? Why shouldn't that be available to the community? So it is. Right? You go to Second Cup and you buy a parv Danish, right? And you get a coffee, which is parv, and then you put in Chol of Yisrael milk, you're okay. There's no problem with that.
Didn't they also say that they're chillers?
That was an issue that we were dealing with in the beginning. We will allow that again only if it's in its container.
Yeah.
Which means for a chiller that there would have to be a lock on the chiller and the mashgiach would have the key to the lock and he would be the one pouring it in. You can make an equivalent like that. That would be presumably allowed. Currently, again, I'm not saying that it's not Chol of Yisrael. There might be, you know, I'm not going to throw out examples because I know a little bit too much to, I don't want to, it's going to go on the internet. But there might be a store in Toronto, a restaurant, that's 90% Chol of Yisrael. But because they want 10% not Chol of Yisrael, they are willing to go with a non-Chol of Yisrael designation. So it doesn't mean that if you happen to have knowledge and you're comfortable making your own decision with your rabbi, or you're comfortable relying on the owner and when he tells you what the facts are, that's the facts. If you're comfortable with it, if you're comfortable with it. If you're not, you're not. But the COR's perspective, it's all considered not Chol of Yisrael. We will not take any responsibility for Chol of Yisrael unless it's in it's prepackaged or there's a lock on the machine. If that happens currently, in these places, there's no lock on that machine, and if it's Chol of Yisrael, then it's Chol of Yisrael, so you can trust it. But not the COR is not making that statement. So we will say the whole store is not Chal Yisrael. Okay? Now, yes, sure, go ahead. Okay, then they cannot cater out of the restaurant. So, because currently the policy is that caterers, because things are, it's not like you have a choice to go to a restaurant, you're invited to a simcha, a bris, let's say, how are you to know if you keep Chal Yisrael standards that it's not Chal Yisrael? This is going to be very, very difficult and very easy to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. So there will be no, currently there will be no non-Chal Yisrael catering. That means somebody who is non-Chal Yisrael, a restaurant, cannot do outside catering. Now, if I ordered a platter from that restaurant, I can take it and do my own catering at my own house or my, you know, I'm not sure whether the shul, that each rabbi will decide whether they want that platter into the shul or not. That's their decision. But the store will not be able to cater the simcha. Mm-hmm. And that's more or less non-chav. And there's clear signage in the store saying that it's not Chal of Yisrael. Okay, that's the fourth criteria. Yes.
Like, let's take second cup. You go in and you buy the hot apple cider, and you go to any one of these. Can you go to a second cup that is not on your list over here as kosher restaurants and get the same?
Many of the products happen to be kosher at second cup, whether or not the store has a COR designation. Right. What are they and what are they not? I mean, it's been a while, it's been about since they opened up, about 6 to 8 months. I don't remember exactly what they are and what they're not, and it also wouldn't be able to say that. But if a product is kosher, it doesn't mean it's kosher. You have to know that the product is kosher, you have to know that the kalim are kosher, and that the process is kosher. Okay? The product is kosher, is it certified product? The kalim are kosher, is there any cross-contamination between kosher and not kosher? And the process is kosher, whether or not there would be any, I'm not talking about second cup now, but in general, if the process is kosher, is with a B. Bishul Akum questions, that a non-Jew is cooking the product, could also render a kosher product on kosher kalim, not kosher at a later stage of the game. So if you're satisfied with the answers to those three questions, it's okay, it's okay, it's not okay, then buy the product. I did, I wrote an article about coffee shops, and the Star K, Rabbi Baruch Beyer, wrote a much longer, more in-depth article about coffee, purchasing a coffee shop. Very commonly, just to throw it out, a regular coffee from a coffee shop, even not from a coffee shop, there should be, to date, and there is no problem to buy a black regular coffee from a coffee shop. Okay, now the milk and the other types of drinks and the flavored coffees, that's a whole different question. But a black regular coffee from a coffee shop, there's no problem. Okay, we've exhausted our time. I could continue to Shemitah.
Yeah.
What's the consensus?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to ask forgiveness from Rabbi Michalowicz for going overboard. But, let's talk a little about Shemitah, because I think it's very important. Shemitah is, as we said, the seventh year. There's a whole group of laws which apply to the farmer in Israel, but there's a whole group of laws that apply to you here in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel. And we have to be very careful, maybe if we understand the laws properly, we'll send a check to Keren HaShvius, which is the organization that supports the farmers in Israel. I think it's a very worthy cause. And
well, you can buy land now in Israel.
Rabbi Lowy is collecting money for that now.
Oh, Rabbi Lowy.
If you want me, I can go to my card and give you the address where you can send it. Rabbi Lowy is collecting money for these farmers in Israel.
Very important.
And they've asked everybody to send $180 to support.
Yes. It's a very, very worthy cause. The farmers, again, being Shomrei Shemitah, even though there might be other farmers, religious farmers, that are not, and they're doing it properly because the rabbi told them that was their opinion, and it's a very extremely worthy cause. But when we talk about Shemitah, we talk about fruits and vegetables which come from Israel. It really goes beyond fruits and vegetables, talking about any product, anything that grows from the land, including wheat, herbs, dried herbs. But most of those things you're buying with hechsherim, and you assume, and hopefully the heksher is taking care of the issue. But let's talk about to the market stuff. fruits and vegetables, fresh fruit and vegetables from Shemitah. Now, fruit, when does it become Shemitah and when does it not become Shemitah is a whole discourse. Right? Currently, most fruits out there in the market are still from the sixth year, not from Shemitah. So they have their own problems, to be Mafresh, Chumas, and Maestros, to separate the tithes. Vegetables are all pretty much now, I think I could say they're all Shemitah produce, and the laws are intricate. Suffice it to say is that according to the straight laws of the Torah and Chazal and the rabbis, most of the vegetables that you see on the market are, because of Shemitah, are not to be eaten. They can't be eaten at all. So it's not like I can, maybe we've heard about Kedusha Shvius, where I can eat it, but save the core and put it in a special garbage can and let it rot. Some of these are detailed halachos. Most vegetables out there on the market today cannot be eaten according to the generic basic laws of Shemitah. Now I'm going to throw in a curve. What is referred to as heter mechira, which we mentioned before, which is an assumption that because we very often in halacha use sale to a non-Jew as a means of permitting things, okay, think of Pesach, for example, maybe in Shemitah that also works. Now, I don't even want to touch the issues and argue back and forth because I'm not, it has nothing to do with me, I'm not even someone who can provide an opinion on that, whether it's yes or it's no. All I can tell you is that the overwhelming majority of all rabbis in the world, my assumption is, and I know some even within the Israeli rabbinate, are of the opinion that the Heter Mechira is, for whatever reason, not validated, and therefore we'll go back to the generic laws of Shemitah. Now, again, there are those who say the Heter Mechira will work, and therefore it's not subject to the laws of Shemitah. There are those who will say Heter Mechira doesn't work. That's not the topic of today's conversation. I asked your rabbi before the class what is his opinion, and he said he opines that we should keep the laws of Shemitah as is and not rely on Heter Mechira. Now, let me qualify the whole class. If you have a personal question about I'm eating at somebody's house and they don't keep and I'm not sure and maybe there's going to be a Shalom Bayis issue and etc. Children, parents, Shalom Bayis and different things like that, those are all individual questions and have to be asked specifically to the rabbi. Okay? Because there are certain situations that maybe require leniencies. That's fair. That's what it's all about. But as a to generalize, we should not rely on the Heter Mechira, and therefore we have to be aware of Shemitah. And if we have to be aware of Shemitah, we have to know that today, if you go to Sobeys, I believe still today, it was true on yesterday, on Monday, that all of their... Today's closed. Okay, so it's still true. Still true. Their yellow, red, and orange peppers are from Israel. Okay, and Highland Farms... At Dufferin and Finch over there, Steels, there are many different items, including peppers, that are from Israel.
Now, from Israel?
Yes. How do we know if it's from Israel? If it's not from Israel, most often, or I'll say many times, there will be a sticker. That's not most often. That's many times there will be a sticker. But the Canadian labeling law requires that if a supermarket puts out a product, they have to say where the product comes from. Now, I'm going to ask you to go to the supermarket the next time, take out a pepper, and see on the pepper it says product of Mexico. Okay? And then look at the sign, and the sign says product of Spain. Right? So, something's...
She's Spanish.
Yeah. Something doesn't jive. Something is not really right about this type of scenario. So what's the answer? So, presumably speaking, is that the signage is not 100% accurate. Presumably speaking, maybe they put in the new product without changing the sign, and they're going to change the sign. Maybe they ticked the wrong box. Maybe it wasn't even on the list of countries that they have on their sign. I don't know. But that's what the Canadian labeling law requires at supermarkets, and presumably it should be reliable. Also, maybe if you don't know what's the halacha, if I just don't, out of the blue, I just don't know, and I need this product. So again, if I can get one that's clearly not from Israel, fine. If not, so who's to say that I have to assume that it's from Israel? Again, a halachic shaila, who's to say that I have to assume it's Israel? Now, all I'm going to propose, we're going to propose, is that we know a lot about the industry. Let me tell you something, that produce from all different countries, before it enters the market here in Toronto, I think this is a rule. There might be an exception to the rule, but it'll go through the first food terminal that's at, it's on the west side of the city, down at downtown. It'll go through the food terminal and then be distributed. Okay? So, if we had somebody theoretically at the food terminal that was telling us when things come from Israel, it would be very helpful, right? Yeah. Plus, if we had a roaming, we'll call it a mashkiach, or whatever, going from doing proper research and knowing and understanding from the communities where people shop and where you should visit, just to collect the information, so then we would also be able to know what kinds of things are coming from Israel and where they're located. Okay, so last week, so we formulated a Shemitah email group. We're up to email alert number 5 already, and there's 50 and change people on the list, which is not enough, right? Only 50. Well, we just formulated it. So
we've had 4 or 5. How come you didn't email out to people who are on the
What we're going to do is, what we thought of doing is a chain email. Maybe a chain text message or something like that.
People who are normally on the culture.
And also,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Should have been on the culture list.
Yeah, yeah. Again, like I said, this is a special interest email group. Whether or not it'll be broadcasted on the COR site or sent out to all of our industrial places at the same time, including the consumers, maybe. It's possible, but you know, we have to think about all different opinions and how everybody's going
to
react to that.
We need to pick at Sobeys, we'll pick at the COR.
Right. But if you are interested, you will sign up on this sheet, and I'll get your email address, and by tomorrow you'll be receiving the alerts. Now, we know that there's a lot of peppers in town. There's a lot of peppers in Toronto from Israel. There's tomatoes from Israel. There's chives from Israel. There's flower zucchini, which was like a zucchini with a little flower on the top. Now, there are persimmons, which only come from Israel.
No, they're now from California.
Now they come from California. Hey. So persimmons, again, it's a fruit, so it's a little different than the vegetables that we're talking about. But persimmons are coming from Israel, and you should look out for all these products wherever you go, not just where we happen to find. We know that they're in No Frills. We know that that's at Wilson and Bathurst. We know that they're in Sobeys, and we know that they're in Highland Farms, and we know that they're in the food terminal. So we just don't have the program up and running fully. This is just, the issues have been on the table for about 6 weeks, but the flood to the market is really 2 weeks, last 2 weeks. Flood to the market. Now, it's probably cheaper these days for Israeli products would be cheaper. Why would it be cheaper? Because they're having a hard time selling it in Israel. So they're going to try to get in as much stuff into the market as possible, and we all have to be aware and keep our eyes open. Okay. Yes.
Are we still talking Shemitah?
Yes.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Let's clarify two things. First of all, is it only the Shemitah year that we're concerned about, and is the G7 about the year before as well?
No.
If
it's from the Shemitah year, then it's possibly forbidden to eat. If it's from the year before, then it can't be eaten until you take Trumas and Maisers from it. Mm-hmm. Truma and Maiser and Tithes.
So we have about a year and a half time frame where we have to be concerned about it could be left over.
Yeah.
The other question I think the rabbi said, but I just want to clarify, it's a processed product from Israel that has vegetables in it, but it has a proper OU hechsher or something like that, you don't have to worry. They brought those vegetables from elsewhere.
They've taken care of that.
This is very new to me. So my question is, if we did have Shemitah fruit, hypothetically,
right,
in our home, and we were hypothetically cooking with it, is anything craved up as
you have to ask your rabbi. You have to ask your rabbi. It's very, very detailed and complex. Yes?
Can you assume that if you get a salad from a core upright establishment, that the vegetables are checked and not in Israel?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and you can shop at Kosher City Plus or the Village Market, although it's far away. But again, you just keep your eyes open, and that's the key now. Yes.
If you're in Israel and you go into a restaurant, you should never have that with any vegetables.
No.
They
take it from. There's two types of standards, and there's three types of standards. So the ones that accept from Israel, the ones that it accept from Arab lands in Israel, and there's ones that don't accept from Israel. Okay, so it gets complicated, but that's sort of what it is. Okay, I think that we're going to, although we have a lot more to talk about, we're going to have maybe a part two with the permission of the rabbi.
Yes.
And we're just going to take questions and answers. If anybody, we can have about 5 minutes of general questions, and then afterwards we can have private questions. Yes.
Okay, actually, it's quite impressive that an hour is...
The questions for the microphone.
You can turn that off. It's impressive that over an hour has gone by and we haven't raised the golden chopsticks issue. My question is, I'm sure you're constrained in many ways, but I guess my question is, what did they do to allow COR to come back for COR to decide to supervise them?
Yeah.
And is it in the interest of COR to patronize a restaurant that I wouldn't normally want to continue patronizing because I knew they cost COR a lot of tsuris and potentially cause a lot of damage to the community, which Baruch Hashem has gone away. But is it in the interest of the COR to patronize it?
I'm going to answer your questions. From a hashgacha perspective, from a certification perspective, okay, the golden chopsticks incident. The question is, why did the COR give back hashgacha to golden chopsticks? What changed, and should we be patronizing it? So the golden chopsticks incident was an unfortunate one. The details I won't go through really here. But suffice it to say that it did cause hardship. Much of what existed in the past regarding golden chopsticks doesn't exist today. Okay? There's a new set of rules, both from their standpoint and from the COR standpoint. So, you know, from the standpoint of golden chopsticks, to come back and to say, you know, we're ready to deal with the COR on the COR's terms, and talk to the COR is a tremendous step forward, and you have to give him a lot of credit for that. The other partners that used to be involved are not involved anymore. Now, the COR certification process, you know, it was accepted by the rabbis that we were going to give certification based on those factors, that there's substantial change in terms of the ownership, plus a step forward, and the level of certification is, at least currently, is somewhat higher than you might see at other restaurants, okay? And as such, from a certification perspective, I will endorse the restaurant. Okay? It is kosher, and the hashgacha is good, and you can eat there. Okay?
Yes. Okay, so yeah. My husband and I are going to be giving you the controversy. My husband and I have been involved in the last year many occasions defending and supporting the core and a lot of different things that have been happening out there. And one of the areas is the area
where it seems that food itself is not the issue, but rather the environment, the threat that if the environment isn't one that's, that the core is comfortable with, that an establishment would lose its hashgacha.
Do you mean music?
Music, television, boys and girls being in the same store together in inappropriate situations. But there's no question that the food is kosher. And I mean, I'm not even sure if everybody here knows what I'm talking about, but
right.
I think it's important, because if not, they're going to be hit with it by FFBs, who are very quick to say that it's, you know, that this is political and it's a power struggle. And we've been defending that point of view, but I'd like to hear if we've been doing a good job. And you know,
well. I think there's just misinformation.
Right.
The COR, the question was, does the COR get involved in other aspects of a restaurant aside from the kashrus of the food?
Right.
The answer, in general, is no. We don't. Again, if there's something going on in a restaurant that an individual is not comfortable with, so you have a to decide. Whether or not, you know, that restaurant should be patronized by yourself. It's not something that the COR really, ever dramatically, involved itself in. There are community rabbis that happen to be on the rabbinical board of the COR that have vested interest in protecting their communities in the way they see fit. And they may make certain requests to the COR, and everything will be taken into account. But as a matter of policy, I cannot say that the COR gets involved, at least not in my experience, in dictating what the environment should be. Now, if I get a complaint about the environment, will I direct them to the owner, or will I even speak to the owner and say, as a matter of fact, this is the complaint I got? Yeah, sure. Because the message should be passed on, and each owner can decide how they want to conduct their business. But there's no dictating that goes on.
That's
the perception?
Yes.
No.
Yep.
Really?
How about Shabbos opening? Is that
yeah, the restaurant can't open
can't
at Shabbos.
Right. So that's not kosher to the food, though.
Yeah.
No,
it is kosher to the food.
Absolutely.
The restaurant is open on Shabbos. No, the actual is another class. But if a restaurant is open on Shabbos, the equipment, whatever they cooked on Shabbos, is not kosher.
Right.
And the equipment may or may not become not kosher.
Change.
Which may in turn make,
just differentiating between what,
yeah. So it is a kashrus issue, but of course, no, I don't think there's a certifying agency in the world. I don't think
to music in the
that gives to
doesn't affect the food. Shabbos opening does, and music.
I don't think. Again, you might know better than me, but gives some to open on to a restaurant that's open on Shabbos.
Absolutely.
Who?
OU has restaurants in the United States of America.
Restaurants that are open on Shabbos?
Absolutely. Like coffee shops that sell bagels and bakeries and pastries. And there's just absolutely, I can quote you from Miami.
You are correct.
None of these second cups
are
open on Shabbos?
Yeah.
I know they are.
Correct.
None of these second cups are open on Shabbos. None of the ones on Bakers?
One in Bakers?
No, they're not open on Shabbos.
Bakers
is not open on Shabbos. Well,
right. Yeah. But anyway, you know, listen. I mean, can a food establishment operate on Shabbos? I mean, what do caterers do, right? So they don't cook on Shabbos. There are certain ways to operate on Shabbos, right? But okay, I think the message is clear. But it might be another discussion because it might not be so clear.
Do you have 2 minutes, like just to give a little bit about the coffee shop thing, not the black coffee, but like, let's just say a latte. Just give us a quick, you don't have to give us the whole email. Like, you're going to get a latte. They warm up the milk.
You're
not
Assuming you're not Chalav Israel. You're not Chalav Yisrael. You want to go into a second cup. You want to get...
Not one of these.
Not one of the kosher.
Regular.
Regular
shop, second cup. A regular second cup. You want to get a latte.
I mean, for me to say what the halacha is, I would have to understand how they make a latte.
You put in the milk steamer thing.
Yeah.
He's not going to answer your question.
Nothing else goes in except milk. It's milk and the black coffee mixed up.
How do you know?
Steam your milk.
But how do you know?
And what else? What else do they use the machine for?
Milk.
How do you know?
If it's just used for milk.
Milk.
It's just and the spout doesn't go into any other type of drink which may not be kosher. The spout.
The spout heats up milk.
Right, and when you put it into the drink?
It's in a jug that they use to heat up milk.
And the milk goes into the cup? The machine is only used for milk.
No.
But how do you know?
And the spout is only put into...
Yeah, and they wipe it off every time with
the cloth,
which I don't know.
And it's hot, so there's transference of.
Okay, so there's a lot of factual things that have to be, but you might be right. It may be kosher if we can establish that the normal process of making a latte is that the machine is only used for milk. They're only using raw regular coffee beans, and there's no question of cross contamination. Then we can establish a heter. But I think I would feel more comfortable to establish that with my own eyes first, just to see exactly how the process is, and then we can talk about it.